The Aldis podcast is brought to you by Aldis International, supplying your expert AI and digital transformation staffing needs across the US and Europe. Today, you are listening to our ServiceNow series, where we interview the best and brightest of the industry to share their story, advice, and views on the exciting world of ServiceNow and digital transformation.
You're listening to the Aldis podcast, ServiceNow series. Our guest today is Paul Webb. Paul is the Global ServiceNow Alliance Leader at EY. Paul, welcome back to the show, my friend. Good to see you.
Yeah, thanks, JP. Thanks for having me on.
So, Paul, look, let's start with yourself, please. A quick recap of yourself, your background in tech, and a little summary of your journey to what's led you to where you are today as the Global Practice Lead for EY, and then we'll jump into some of the stuff we want to talk about today.
So graduated from the University of South Wales in the UK, started out life as a weapons system, real-time software engineer doing really low-level code. It's the only job my kids understand that I ever did. My dad was a rocket scientist, right? Moved on from that into more commercial consulting, worked for the British Standards Institution for a while, moved to the US in 1990, did a stint with Ernst & Young, KPMG, ran my own business for about 8 years doing product lifecycle management software. Got a great opportunity after signing the company with Gartner Group, running West Coast Consulting for them. And then in 2008, moved to EY within their tech transformation practice, ultimately took on the ServiceNow Alliance and built it into over $500 million business over the past 4 years.
Thank you for that. Wonderful. For people listening who didn't catch our first episode together, I'd recommend giving that a listen because we go into a lot of detail about your roles and responsibilities. But we're going to take a slightly different approach with today. You and I were speaking a few weeks ago at the ServiceNow kickoff event, and we were talking about a lot of what you're sharing with your team, the other leaders in the different divisions of things that you've picked up over the years, particularly around how you run your ServiceNow groups, working across multiple regions. So to set the stage, can you just give us a little bit of insight of what that entails, the different teams, how you manage different time zones, different functions, the different projects at any one time, and then we'll talk about what you're sharing with your team of leaders to help them be better at what they do.
Wow, that's a lot. Thanks for the very specific question, JP. Let's just set the scene. EY is interesting in because we're not one consulting company. Most people think of EY as just one entity, but we're not. We're a federation of member firms around the world. And each firm has very, I won't say complete autonomy, but pretty close to complete autonomy. And so that means there's a ServiceNow practice in the Americas and there's a ServiceNow go-to-market team in the Americas, but there's one in Asia, there's one in Europe, in fact, multiple in Europe, one in UK and so on. So I can't wave a magic wand and mandate that everybody does things a particular way, and nor is that particularly productive in my world. So I end up being almost the politician of the game, right? How do I encourage, support, and help drive a single vision, a single strategy, when everyone can truly do things their own way if they want to? It requires the art of collaboration to be taken to next level thinking, right? Otherwise, it becomes a whole bunch of cats heading in a whole bunch of different directions, and that can get really challenging to drive success. So this has been a fun journey. And what I've found has been incredibly helpful to me is the fact that I've got a consulting background, so I can speak the language of the consulting teams. The facts that I built the Americas team from zero to where it was before taking on this global role, I've got the credibility to have the conversation, but I'm going toe-to-toe with peers that are at least as smart, if not smarter, than I am. And so if you can't listen and learn and adapt, it's a dead end. That's been the world that I live in. That's the ecosystem I'm working in. And then when you add in keeping ServiceNow happy at the same time, it's an awful lot of moving parts. It's quite a fun role to do.
Yeah, and I know when we were talking about it, sitting down in Vegas and you were sharing, look, the complexity of the role, but you enjoy it. One of the things you were really passionate about was teaching others how to do the same, because in order to hand off a region like the Americas, that still requires those leaders to be able to influence the business units, work on both sides of the fence and with ServiceNow. Staying on the topic of how you teach it, because you've been doing this a long time, you've developed these skills, you've got your own consulting background. What are some of the fundamentals that you pass on to the business leaders in these different regions to help them play both sides, increase spend and adoption of ServiceNow while working with the end customers? Are there any underlying traits that you demonstrate to them or share that has helped the different business units be successful and ultimately keep ServiceNow happy at the very top table?
I think there are so many parts to it, but let's start with step one. I would almost argue I was slow to learn this and maybe a little bit too conceited about it initially. But step one is you have to care about each other's metrics. So EY has to care about ServiceNow's metrics. And you could say that about any alliance partnership, right? If all we care about are utilization, revenue, and sales of professional services, and we don't care about ServiceNow sales reps getting that new ACV, getting that commission check, right? I don't want to be crude, but they're pretty much coin operated, right? They're in this to make money.
Yeah.
And the only way they take home a healthy paycheck is if they get their commission. And the only way they get commission is if they sell licenses. They don't get commission from selling EY consulting services. So they're going to partner with the company that gets them the best, that helps them accelerate a deal, increase the deal size, cares about them. And I think when we really had the light bulb moment of going, we have to care about them if we want them to care about us, but we also have to educate them on how to care about our metrics so that we are truly in an alliance and a partnership, not just two ships going in roughly the same direction. That was game changing. And we saw that across EMEA in the past year or so, when we helped our European counterparts really start to care, the impact was significant. I mean, we had a blowout year last year, last calendar year. So that I think is step one, care about each other. And then the second word is relationship, right? It is not a transaction, it is a relationship. And so building that connective tissue between our teams, ServiceNow teams, between the Americas team and the EMEA team and the Asia team. And the biggest value proposition for us of going to events like Sales Kickoff and Knowledge, yes, it's really important to showcase who we are to the customer base, but it's one of those rare opportunities for our global leaders to actually meet and connect and build relationships with each other. So that then builds trust. Once you have trust and you have relationship, you can really all pull in the same direction.
I saw firsthand, you were kind enough to bring me to some of the EY events in Vegas, and the relationship you guys hold with ServiceNow is front and center. And that's obviously spurring a lot of the success. So staying on that topic, you were kind enough to share some highlights of 2023's success with ServiceNow and how that's setting up for a really exciting 2024. When you look at the landscape and the roadmap for ServiceNow at EY, what are some of the standout things that you think we can expect to see in 2024 from continued success? And is there anything reading the tea leaves where you see EY breaking new ground or growing its capabilities so the ServiceNow community can watch out? I know you don't want to give away the full strategy, but I know there's some things that are floating around there that could be good for the audience to hear.
There was a press release we put out. We did a lot of work with ServiceNow as we closed out calendar year 23. And the reason I separate calendar year is EY's fiscal year ends June 30th. So we closed out last calendar year. We put out an announcement with ServiceNow just after their earnings call. Responsible AI is front and center for us. We have an offering in this space to help companies manage their AI investments in a healthy way. The opportunity for AI to go rogue in a company is huge. You know, I won't put you on the spot and ask you how many AI tools you've got floating around on your phone and your computer right now, but it's going to proliferate even more. And in the corporate setting, that's exciting because it can truly accelerate development. It can truly accelerate ideation because you can ask Gen AI to give you inspiration by just asking a bunch of scripts, right? But as it starts to create code for us, as we start to rely on it for chatbot, it is at risk. If there was a, there was an article in the news the other day, I can't remember which airline it was, and I wouldn't say if I did, but they ended up having to pay a passenger because their chatbot gave them false information about bereavement tickets. Family had a bereavement, guy was going to get on a plane, asked the chatbot whether or not the ticket would be reimbursed. The chatbot said yes. Ultimately, the airline had to pay. So that kind of hallucination or erroneous thinking that a rogue AI can do, we have to manage. So sorry, that was a bit long-winded, but what we're trying to do here is really focus on responsible AI risk management within the business. That's a big play. The second big play is operational technology. We're going to see ServiceNow move from the traditional data center space deeper and deeper into the operational technology space. There are so many opportunities here to drive adoption of service management, change management, self-healing of enabled devices, whether that's in a power grid or in a facility or a manufacturing line. That's got to be the next big space for ServiceNow. And it's going to take time, but it's going to be exponentially greater than just managing all the IT stack.
You are listening to the Aldis Podcast. When you're looking to scale your team, or if you are interested in showcasing your company in a future episode, reach out today. Or if you're in the market for a new role, visit our website to view open positions, www.aldis.com.
So, Paul, I want to go full circle with this because I know, again, going back to our in-person conversations a few weeks ago, you were sharing a lot about wanting to help the next generation of leaders, not just within AI, but the broader community. As the ServiceNow ecosystem continues to mature, quite frankly, there's going to be a continued shortage and a continued need for people to step up into team leadership, divisional leadership, and that's going to come from within the ecosystem, individual contributors. As somebody who's reached the very highest levels in leadership within ServiceNow, you know, Global Alliance Manager for EY, one of ServiceNow's few biggest partners, you've walked the path, you've seen the pitfalls, and you're doing a lot with your EY team to help them in future leadership. Speaking to an audience of maybe junior to mid-sized managers or people considering it, what are some of the things you would share with them to maybe dispel some myths or offer some encouragement or give some words of wisdom and guidance to say, listen, take that step and here's what you can find when you do so?
As you and I have chatted, I'm pretty passionate about this topic. So the first thing, I think as we see people grow into managers, senior managers, ultimately partners, there's always the fear of the first step. In fact, we say senior manager one, for your first year as a senior manager in a firm is like the hardest job, because before you reach that level, there's always someone above you helping guide and direct and conduct. So yeah, you manage your work. Yeah, you may manage junior people, but you're not really held accountable for major outcomes. There's always someone that's got your back. Once you reach senior manager, you start to look behind you to see who's got your back, and the answer is the mirror. So how do you do that? What I've found, you know, there are many different leadership styles. There's textbooks written on it, but I'm a big proponent of servant leadership. And you can look that up, and it'll, again, articles gazoo on it. But I like the approach that's worked well for me, which is understand your team and your team's motivations. Really try and get behind what they want in their career, what they want to achieve as success, and make it very clear to them that you've got their back, that you're going to protect them from the noise. Their job is to be the best they can be, to, you know, use too many cliches here a bit. But what I found by taking that style and coaching, mentoring, encouraging, is that you build loyalty, you build trust, and you build a team that will take the hill with you, as opposed to take the hill because you told them to or take it for you. They take it with you. And so it requires giving up micromanaging. It requires sometimes expecting or accepting 80, 90% of what you could have done if you did it yourself, and knowing that's good enough and it will keep getting better. I found that styles where it's all about managing executive leadership's perspective and making yourself look good is a recipe for disaster, because eventually the emperor has no clothes, right? If all you do is manage up and you don't really drive effective teams, eventually it'll just get exposed and things will fall apart. People will leave. I've been privileged to have an exceptionally low attrition rate of people that have worked for me over the years. And I attribute that to the fact that I'm not about making myself look good, except as a pure byproduct of the work that the people do that work with me.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because you touched on another aspect of management, which is managing upwards. And some cases that can be more difficult. Again, you shared a little bit on that. So I think it's beneficial to talk about why we stay on the topic of management, effective strategies to manage upwards, what's worked for you. And as you share this with your own internal leadership team, what do you tell them?
People that don't manage up are in for a world of hurt. If you don't manage up and set expectations, manage those expectations, communicate success, challenges, failures. If you don't do that, it'll get done to you. So then what happens is the people above you build their own opinion, their own impression. They may hear from people that are less knowledgeable or have a grumbling about something. And suddenly you get managed down. And that cannot always be a good thing. As long as you pay attention to how do you communicate the right message, how do you do it effectively? I have one colleague that's the master of 10-point PowerPoint. Like, he'll produce a handful of PowerPoint slides and the bulk of it is in 10-point text, right? Recipe for disaster, because one thing you learn pretty quickly is that senior leadership do not have the time or patience to read 100 lines of text. What they want are highlights, success stories, and what can I do to help you? You know, when you keep the point, like the minimum point size of 18 font, then you have a chance of getting the message across.
That's good. And it's something that's often overlooked. So I'm glad we touched on it. So Paul, final question for me. We'll be getting together in Knowledge in May. When we see you again, will there be anything specific that you'll be sharing about this EY ServiceNow for the remainder of the year? And look, we always finish on a message to potential future employees. Obviously, EY are leading the charge within ServiceNow. There's continued investments for those in the community who are thinking about where their next career opportunity may sit. What can you tell them about what to expect from EY in the months and years to come?
Yeah, obviously, everyone's dealing with the headwinds right now, but our growth trajectory is going to be around AI. It's going to be around risk and risk management and cybersecurity and OT. And all of that comes wrapped in consumer-grade experience. We're very focused on delivering an experience to our customer that is what you would expect from a B2C play, right? If you're a consumer, you want things on your app. And so human factors, operational technology, AI, cyber and risk are big, big deals. You're going to see that message coming across thick and fast across Knowledge.
Paul, as always, super grateful for your time. Thanks for coming back on the show and giving us these updates. And yeah, we look forward to seeing you at Knowledge.
Yeah, great, JP. Thanks so much for the time.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Aldis Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review. We are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and any Android podcast of choice. You can also head over to our website, www.aldis.com, to listen to more podcasts, view our open roles, and stay up to date with industry news. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for more great episodes coming very soon.